This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, August 20th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from Eureka Springs, the Victorian mountain village, featuring art, music, dining, lodging, various attractions, and outdoor activities. Information, including a visitor's vacation planner, an events calendar, newsletter registration, and more, available on the web at eurekasprings.org. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we pay a visit to a Farmington veterinary clinic that practices regenerative medicine on animals. Plus, we begin a series of stories that will offer an overview of the various onstage performances you can see throughout the region during the course of the new theater season. We also have a preview of Friday's Northwest Arkansas Tech Fest and more. But first, unemployment data released Friday by the Department of Workforce Services shows an increase of 0.1 percentage point from 7.2% in June to 7.3% in July. Increases were seen in manufacturing sectors, while other sectors experienced notable declines. Spokeswoman Kim Friedman says the government and hospitality sectors will see an increase once classes resume in early fall.
We typically do tend to see an increase in the government sector due to public schools and public universities being back in session, and that is an increase we typically see around August, September. Your public schools, your public universities fall under the government sector, and your private schools, your private universities fall under educational services.
The national unemployment rate remains at 8.2%, and there are over 28,000 more employed Arkansans than in July of 2011. Today is the first day of fall classes at the University of Arkansas. As many Fayetteville residents are likely aware by now, a steady flow of students have been moving onto campus during official move-in days last week. Not including students living in sorority or fraternity houses, about 5,100 students have moved onto campus. Dave Davies is the Executive Director of University Housing.
It went pretty well. We checked in about half of them on Wednesday and Thursday, and so those were the biggest days. The others were people who had come in early for sorority recruitment or for band or to volunteer or things like that. So those were the two really busy days.
There are about the same amount of students living on campus now as there were last year, but both years' totals are up about 300 students from the fall 2010 semester. Davey says there is scarcely room to house additional students on campus.
The disadvantage is that we don't have the space for upperclassmen that we would like. We will be adding, however, 600 beds by next fall, and that will relieve that. There's an awful lot of sophomores that would prefer to stay on campus, and we haven't had space for them this year and last year.
416 of those beds will be added at Hotz Hall when the building's conversion back into a dormitory is completed, and about 214 beds will be added at Founders Hall, in addition to Brough Commons, that will also expand the university's dining capacity. In the meantime, however, the university continues to house some students at the Crown Apartments near Baum Stadium.
That is basically an area where we have rented some units from Crown Apartments for upper-class students. We put staff down there just like there would be staff in a residence hall, and we sort of purchase the space wholesale and then lease it to the students by the bed as any other housing contract would be.
Davies says more students ended up being housed at the Crown than were initially intended. He estimates that about 160 students total are housed there through the university housing department. Benton County residents will have a chance tomorrow night to learn about what their county government is doing for them. The county will hold a county hall meeting at 6 p.m. at the Siloam Springs Community Center on Olive Street. County Judge Bob Clinard says the meetings raise residents' awareness about county operations.
We initiated county hall meetings when I came into the office that we try to do once a quarter. We'd kind of move around the county and have a meeting to discuss issues that are pertinent to our county residents as to what we're doing and why we're doing it and get them more familiar with county government. So we're having this meeting over there tomorrow night to bring to the attention of the people of the southwestern part of the county as to what we're doing as far as roads and EMS service and all the issues that concern them.
Clinard says the topic of roads will be one area of focus for officials at the meeting.
There's two ways to do roads to improve them from gravel. Is that you can pave them, or you can use asphalt, or you can use a chip and seal, which is a little less than an asphalt overlay. So we bought a new chip and seal machine, and we just want to explain to people why we're doing what we're doing. And I think in the past there's been a little bit of negative feedback on the chip and seal program, but I just don't think it's been done properly. The actual installation of the chip and seal wasn't done correctly. We are doing it correctly now, and we just want to tell people what we're doing.
Of about 1,400 miles of roads in the county, Clinard estimates about half are gravel and half are paved, and about half of the paved roads have a chip-sealed surface. He says that overlaying asphalt with chip seal can extend the life of a road. Additionally, overlaying with chip seal prepares gravel roads for asphalt paving in 3 to 4 years. The current drought has affected farmers and ranchers throughout the state. To help them cope with the legal aspects of the problem, the National Agricultural Law Center of the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture will host a web seminar later this month. Center Director Harrison Pittman says a plethora of topics will be discussed.
So we're looking forward to helping people through really what would be some of the most difficult times they've confronted. You know, and I'm hearing quite a few stories that really they signal that there's some people going through a great deal of financial stress in the farming community, and we just hope that we can help them out and make things a little bit easier for them.
The free webinar will begin at 11 a.m. on August 30th. Everybody is welcome, and questions can be submitted in advance. More information is available at nationalaglawcenter.org. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals didn't have much luck this weekend. Rain postponed the Nats Friday game against the Midland Rockhounds, and wet weather also postponed the game Saturday against the Frisco Rough Riders. As a result of Saturday's delay, the Naturals played a doubleheader yesterday against the Rough Riders. The Naturals lost the first game 3-0. The score didn't improve for the second game, as the Rough Riders again came out on top with a score of 3-1. The Naturals will have another shot tonight to end the four-game losing streak. They play again in Frisco at 7 o'clock. The Razorback men's basketball team finished their tour of Italy over the weekend. On Friday, the Hogs finished their sweep of Italy, beating the All-Star Italy team 93-73. Sophomore BJ Young netted 22 points for the Razorbacks, and junior Cody Clark scored 17. The Razorbacks won all four of their games in Italy, and they made their way back to Arkansas Sunday just in time for the start of classes today. The Razorback soccer team won its season opener at home Friday. The Razorbacks beat the Austin Peay Governors with a final score of 2-1. Tonight, expect clear skies to eventually become partly cloudy. We'll have lows in northwest Arkansas in the mid-50s and a low in the River Valley in the lower 60s. Tomorrow, we'll have partly cloudy conditions in the morning with clear skies later in the day, with a high of 86 in northwest Arkansas and a high of 93 in the River Valley. Tomorrow night, expect cloudy conditions with a low of 57 degrees in northwest Arkansas and a low of 66 degrees in the River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. A Farmington veterinary clinic practices regenerative medicine on animal patients. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich made an appointment to learn more.
Veterinarian Dr. Tim O'Neill operates Country Veterinary Service on a pasture along Jimmy DeVault Road in Farmington. He's a conventional vet who for the past 25 years has treated every conceivable kind of sick and injured farm and domestic animal.
I'm about 45 to 50% small animal, and then about 25% cattle, and about 25% equine, and to throw in the mix about 1% sheep, goats, and hogs, and the occasional rabbit. And I also have worked on a tiger or two, and African lion, and mountain lions, and llamas, kriyas, alpacas.
Dr. O'Neill, dressed in flowered swimming pool blue scrubs this afternoon, is also engaged in cutting-edge science. He practices stem cell and platelet-rich plasma therapy just this morning on a canine.
We harvested approximately a tablespoon of fat out of the dog. Then that got taken to the lab. Out of that, I harvested a small plug of stem cells about half the size of that clicker on your pin. Then at the same time, we drew two tubes of blood. I harvested platelet-rich plasma out of that, washed them, concentrated them, then resuspend them in the platelet-rich plasma, and then injected them into the hips to hopefully regenerate some cartilage and alleviate pain from a horrible case of hip dysplasia. So regenerative medicine is actually taking cells from the body, concentrating them, redirecting them to where they need to heal the body.
The Obama administration 3 years ago removed barriers to expand federal funding for human embryonic stem cell research after the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit overturned a ruling on the matter. A registry for human embryonic stem cell lines was established at the National Institutes of Health, along with strict guidelines for both public and private research. As such, stem cells can be used to promote growth of tissue, organs, and bones and repair diseased ones, dividing and replenishing damaged cells. Science distinguishes between two types of stem cells, embryonic and non-embryonic somatic adult stem cells. Dr. O'Neill harvests adult stem cells directly from his patients, taking small bits of fat as well as harvesting blood for growth factor platelets.
This is not embryonic stem cells. This is not fetal stem cells. There is absolutely no death with this procedure.
Laboratory research on stem cell therapy and clinical trials on both animals and humans are underway at prestigious universities and medical centers across the country. It's been FDA approved as a medical treatment on humans for more than a decade. But Dr. Tim O'Neill's a pioneer in veterinarian regenerative therapy because he's applying the medical technology to his patients.
Predominantly, it's treating arthritis, any procedure that has to do with orthopedics, from fractures to whatever. It can be used by itself. It could be used in conjunction with regular surgery.
Because of the therapy, he says, regenerates cartilage and bone. Stem cell and platelet-rich plasma therapy is a single outpatient procedure, which takes part of a day.
So really, as right at first, after we've drawn the pre-anesthetic blood work, then we get them anesthetized, and that initial procedure where I harvest the fat, get them stitched back up and back off the table, and draw the blood sample for the platelet-rich plasma, maybe 20 minutes. Then we spend about 3 hours in the lab getting everything ready and harvested, concentrated. Then it's about, after they're sedated again, 5 minutes to make the injections. Then they're woke back up and they can go home.
Dr. Tim O'Neill said he became interested in veterinarian stem cell therapy after the owner of a horse asked him to inquire.
Then, a little over a year and a half ago, I met this company at Western States Veterinary Conference. They're out of Houston, and we got to talking. And at that time, they were trying to get FDA approval so we could do this. They finally got it just before Thanksgiving last year. At that point in time, I didn't have the money. I want to take on the loans that I needed to bring in the equipment. This spring, I did. And March 28th was the first day we did those first three procedures, and we've been rolling ever since.
Since he introduced the therapy at his clinic, Dr. O'Neill has conducted more than 15 stem cell PRP procedures. Recently, he treated Janice Joplin, that's a dog, who came in for a checkup this morning.
The second day after the procedure, she jumped up on the bed, even though the owner was telling her no. She hadn't done that for months. Couldn't do it without them helping her hips up.
JJ can now squat to pee for the first time in years, Dr. O'Neill said, and is off her pain meds. Initial results, he said, may be evident as early as the first week, with progressive improvement over the next several months. He's had an 85% success rate so far, he said. So what does one treatment cost?
If you start looking, and the best way to explain this, if you start looking for a surgical replacement of a hip, that's going to cost you $6,000 to $10,000. This procedure, it varies a little bit. Predominantly, it's going to be around $1,000, maybe $1,200.
And if all of this sounds too good to be true, Nature, the International Journal of Science, reported on three published studies recently showing that stem cell therapy restored eye, heart, and hair follicle function in laboratory mice. Walking into his lab, Dr. O'Neill points to a device manufactured by Ingenerin, which holds glass vials of harvested adipose tissue and blood. It spins and isolates stem cells and blood platelets, part of a 20-step process, prior to injection.
That's the centrifuge. And but it's all computerized. All we do is just set it on it, hit start, and it goes.
And evidently, so do his patients. Dr. O'Neill has posted before and after video clips on his Facebook page. We step into his office, stacked with paperwork and research, to take a look first at Haley, a pudgy elder lab.
She can hardly take two steps without having to sit down and rest because of bad hips. That's kind of a sad video, isn't it? Now, this is Haley 3 months later after the procedure. Same dog. And you can see her jump right up on the same floor. And she's walking around without any painkillers.
Dr. O'Neill shows several more before and after. And then one of his poster dogs, Sarge, a Great Pyrenees, outside on the front parking lot, clearly suffering with a bad hip.
When he stops, his whole hips just sit and quiver. This was the day of the procedure before we did anything.
You can see the dog.
But on x-rays, his left hip was almost totally out of the socket.
Video taken of Sarge 3 months later shows him trotting, then dragging his owner off towards some shrubs. His owner may need ibuprofen, but Sarge clearly doesn't. Gimpy dogs, arthritic cats, and especially lame horses were traditionally put down in order to end their misery. But now it appears some are getting a new lead or leash on life with regenerative therapy. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To see before and after video of Dr. O'Neill's regenerative therapy patients, visit countryveterinaryserviceinc.com. Search for the Facebook link and scroll down to June video sections.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. Walmart officials are pleased with their continued momentum. The retail giant saw revenue and profits climb higher in the second quarter. The Bentonville-based retailer posted second quarter net income of more than $4 billion on total revenues of $114 billion. Same-store sales in the U.S. rose 2.2% during the quarter. America's Car Mart said its net income slipped slightly as the average retail price of a vehicle sold fell 2%. For the Bentonville-based used car chain's first quarter, revenues actually rose 9.4% to a little over $110 million. Profits for the quarter topped $8.1 million, down slightly from $8.2 million 1 year ago. Centennial Bank entered into an agreement with Premier Bank Holding Company of Florida. Terms of the deal were not fully released, and the transaction must meet regulatory conditions and court approval. It's Centennial Bank's eighth Florida bank purchase in the last 3 years. Simmons First National Corporation announced the anticipated retirement of Chairman and CEO J. Thomas May to be effective December 2013. May has had health issues but has continued to lead the Pine Bluff-based bank holding company. George Makris, a longtime director, will succeed May as Chairman and CEO. and he'll assume the position of CEO-elect on January 1st of next year. Last-minute efforts toward reaching a payment agreement between Community Health Systems and Arkansas Blue Cross Blue Shield have failed, which will create a change in how thousands of Northwest Arkansas residents will pay for medical services. Essentially, community health officials have asked for higher payment for services from Blue Cross, the state's largest health insurer, but Blue Cross said it would not budge. Community Health owns 7 hospitals and clinics in Northwest Arkansas, as well as facilities in El Dorado, Forest City, Helena, and Newport. The International Trade Administration announced new export data that shows Arkansas merchandise exports increased 36% in the first half of 2012. It's compared to the same period last year. Nationally, merchandise export growth climbed 7% higher this year so far. Exports from Arkansas grew from $2.8 billion to $3.8 billion during the first 6 months of the year. And a group pushing to legalize medicinal marijuana turned in an additional 74,000 signatures this week in what supporters hoped would be enough to qualify the proposal for the November ballot. The group, Arkansans for Compassionate Care, fell about 26,000 signatures short of a required 62,507 valid voter signatures on July 6th. With a new collection effort, their odds are pretty good that the proposal will qualify for voter consideration. The medical marijuana proposal would allow for up to 30 nonprofit dispensaries in Arkansas. Local cities and counties could choose to ban them. A recent Talk Business Hendricks College poll found that 47% of Arkansans support medicinal marijuana, while just 46% oppose. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
It's Monday, August 20th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And I get to talk about a topic that fascinates me.
Shopping.
No, different topic. The Civil War.
There we go.
I became Southern when I moved to Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
My name is on the wall at the Confederate Cemetery in Fayetteville.
Is it really?
I am truly, because they were very nice and I helped them with some things and they put my name on the wall.
Very cool.
So I'm Southern, born and not born, but bred. And I got to go to the Civil War Symposium that happened a week or so ago in Fayetteville.
Oh.
National Park Service, major speakers talking about the war in the Trans-Mississippi, which gets no glamour, because Scarlett O'Hara had nothing to do with it, apparently. But, you know, major battles happened here, and it's a very interesting topic. They talked about African Americans. They talked about Hispanic Americans and the war in New Mexico. I sound like Kyle talking about Louise Thaden, don't I?
No, you're good.
Okay. Anyway, if you missed the symposium, there is an exhibit up at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale that is stories of life on the home front.
Mm-hmm.
During the Civil War. Of course, the home front and the battlefield were never separated.
Mm-hmm.
Since battles took place in your backyard and people came and took your cows and it burned your houses and it was brutal. And the name of the exhibit is nothing but Sorrow, Trouble, and Worry.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. It'll be up until the first of next year. Susan Young, who's the curator of the exhibit and outreach coordinator for the Shiloh Museum, says most Ozark women lived a life that was a far cry from Scarlett O'Hara's. Their Civil War was a miserable day-to-day fight against starvation, disease, and lawlessness. Fascinating exhibit, open today from 10 to 5, Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale, and it's free.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
There's a photo in my baby book of the first step that I ever took. I ended up on my butt with a puzzled look. Ever since I've been kinda confused. When life tripped me up, I was easily bruised. But time has a way of healing wounds.
Sean Camp of Perryville in Perry County was born into a musical family. The Arkansasian got an early start in music himself, so much so, it was no surprise Camp has been a musician most of his life. After years as a player and songwriter in the music business in Nashville, Tennessee, where he moved in 1987, Sean Camp built a solid reputation in that community. He's played fiddle with the Osborne Brothers, Alan Jackson, Jerry Reed, Susie Vogas, and Trisha Yearwood. His songs have been recorded by Garth Brooks, George Strait, Brooks and Dunn, John Anderson, Josh Turner, and more. He's co-written songs with the likes of Loretta Lynn, Guy Clark, and Jim Lauderdale. Sean Camp is well known in the Nashville community as a hit songwriter and a multi-instrumentalist. But it wasn't supposed to be that way. Sean Camp was supposed to be a star.
I tossed and turned and tried counting sheep. When will I ever learn? I'll never sleep till you're by my side. It's just a waste of time. Ain't no use trying to get you off my mind.
In 1992, Sean Camp signed as a solo act to Reprise Records, the famed subsidiary label of Warner Brothers. The following year, Sean Camp's self-titled debut album was released. The lead songs on the album were Fallen Never Felt So Good, which opened this episode of Arkin Songs, and Confessin' My Love, heard here. The album features star musicians like guitarist James Burton and bassist Roy Husky Jr. and Willie Weeks, and vocalists Allison Krauss and Shelby Lynn. Camp sings, plays fiddle, dobro, and acoustic guitar, and co-wrote 9 of its 10 songs. He's also pictured somewhat seductively on his debut album's front cover in a bedroom scene with his western shirt unbuttoned to his navel, blonde hair cascading down the nape of his neck, and his head cocked questioningly.
Lonesome feelings got a hold on me, and if I don't want to cry no tears, why'd I head out down that lonely street, and why'd I ever come in here? 'Cause when I start drinking, bound to start thinking about who you're with tonight. And I'm bound to cry, bound to wonder whose spell you're under. And if you hold him tight, then I'm bound to cry, bound to want you, but I don't want to. And honey, if y'all walk by, then I'm bound to cry.
Buzz was on in the early 1990s about Sean Camp, this handsome Arkansas kid in his 20s who had authenticity, songwriting talent, and musical and vocal chops. Would he be the next Glenn Campbell? Sean Camp music videos were being shown on TV, and he was getting radio airplay. Signed to a major American record label, all of the elements were in place for singer, songwriter, and musician Sean Camp to blow up as a performer.
Wake up in the morning when the radio plays. Drank my coffee with the local DJ. Talking about traffic on the interstate. Bound to be late, it's one of them days. One of them days when the sun don't shine. Same old pain in this heart of mine. Sky is gray, black and blue.
Both the performer Sean Camp and the album Sean Camp did well enough for Reprise and Warner Brothers Records that a follow-up was set. Surely the second album would solidify Camp's establishment as an artist. But when Camp turned in the tapes to his follow-up album to the company, the country music performer's work was considered too country. The label asked for less traditional country music sounds and more electric guitars. Sean Camp balked at such impudent suggestions. He has to be given a release date for the second Sean Camp album or be given a release from his major label contract. The company obliged by releasing Sean Camp from his contract. But both the performer and the album Sean Camp lived on, and more than 15 years later, Reprise Nashville finally issued Sean Camp's long-dismissed second album in fall of 2010, along with the re-release of his debut album. Sean Camp's long years of work in the music business were thus again acknowledged by the industry, but one gets the idea Sean Camp will be writing, playing, and singing regardless.
There ain't no loving when I get home late. A hard day of labor and my old back aches. TV dinner, Channel 8. John Wayne just thought he had the longest.
Here in its entirety is Arkansas-er Sean Camp of Perryville in Perry County with a song from his 1993 debut, Sean Camp, called Confessin' My Love.
And turned and tried counting sheep. When will I ever learn? I'll never sleep till you're by my side. It's just a waste of time. Ain't no use trying to get you off my mind. So I guess I'll be confessing my love.
I want you too much. I might get all embarrassed and a little tongue-tied, 'cause I ain't had no lessons in expressing it right. Yes, I guess I'll be confessing my love to you tonight. Toughest thing to do is up and speak my mind, but I've been wanting you for too long a time. Now I just can't take this anymore. About to hear some knocking on your front door. 'Cause tonight I guess I'll be confessing my love, confessing my love. There ain't gonna be no resting at all, 'cause I want you too much. I might get all embarrassed and a little tongue-tied, 'cause I ain't had no lessons in expressing it right. Yes, I guess I'll be confessing my love. Yes, I guess I'll be confessing my love to you tonight. Yes, I'll be confessing. Yes, I'll be confessing my love.
Sean Camp of Perryville in Perry County with Confessing My Love from his self-titled 1993 debut solo album, reissued in 2010. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. During the last decade, the theater scene has grown exponentially throughout our listening area. Between professional theater companies, university drama departments, and children's arts organizations, aspiring actors of all ages in the community have had the opportunity to participate on stage. Several organizations have announced the shows for their upcoming season, and today we begin a series that will offer an overview of some of the numerous theatrical performances you'll be able to see in Northwest Arkansas and the River Valley during the next year. We'll start our series by focusing on children's theater. Mark Landon Smith, Executive Director for Arts Life Theater in Fayetteville, explains there's a lot of thought that goes into selecting plays for a season.
In choosing our season for children's theater, what we try to look for are, especially since we have our second stage, which allows us to do more socially relevant theater, we look for topics that are hot-button topics at the moment, like we're doing coming up this season. We're doing a show called The Secret Life of Girls, which is about teen bullying, which is a hot topic subject right now. But we look for things that are going to be attractive to not only audiences, but to our kids, too.
The Secret Life of Girls opens September 6th at Arts Life Theater. 2 weeks later, the Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale debuts Banicula, the first of two children's productions planned for the 2012-2013 season. Harry Blundell, director of theater at the ACO, says audiences will recognize this production because it's based on a popular children's book.
For a certain generation, everybody knows about the Vampire Bunny. And it's a great story that involves talking dogs and cats and a vampire bunny and things that keep missing out of the house. So that's really fun. We've just finished auditions for that in the last two nights.
If you like the theme of unique creatures, you may be interested in Arts Life Theater's production of Plan 9 from Outer Space, which Executive Director Mark Landon Smith says holds the title of the world's worst movie ever made. Smith has taken the movie script and adapted it for the stage. Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell, Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's Academy of the Arts, says the Academy will begin its theater season in November.
These shows are shows, they're always musical theater, they're Rodgers and Hammerstein or they're Disney. They're fun for the whole family. I mean, children and teens and adults love it. So what we have going this year, four different shows. First of all, coming up in November is Scrooge the Musical. full-length production of it, and it is, yes, it is a musical, different a little bit than what people might consider as the traditional Christmas Carol. And so, but it's very good, very entertaining. That'll be presented by our teenagers.
Following that production, you'll have not one but two opportunities to catch Beauty and the Beast. Arts Life Theater's production is slated for mid-November, and the Academy of the Arts performance is scheduled for mid-December. After that, there is a lull in the onstage action until Arts Life Theater returns in February with a production of A Separate Piece, which is based on the John Knowles novel. Executive Director Mark Landon Smith says his students love tackling this kind of work because it really challenges them as actors.
When you see something dramatized, it's so much more effective. Like, we've done Bright Blue Mailbox Suicide Note, which was about teen suicide. And then we did Bang Bang You're Dead, which is about school shootings. So, and then Secret Life of Girls, which is about teen bullying. So we want to send these messages out, and they seem to be so much more effective when you're actually seeing them dramatized. And, of course, this is a piece of classical literature that a lot of students have read. And so it adds another layer to that, that you're seeing something that you've read dramatized.
Books continue to be the inspiration for children's theater performances in March as ALT presents Miss Nelson is Missing and the ACO mounts its production of Go Dog Go. Arts Life Theater will wrap up its season in May with The Little Mermaid Jr. The Academy of the Arts will also wrap up its season in May with two shows, Once Upon a Mattress Jr. and Singing in the Rain. If you would like more information on where to find little vampire bunnies, mermaids, and aliens on stage this year, visit OzarksAtLarge.com.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face.
This is Ozarks at Large. On Friday, the University of Arkansas Global Campus in Fayetteville will be the site of NWA Tech Fest. It's a technical conference with a primary focus to provide training and teaching sessions that are immediately beneficial to the broadest range of IT professionals in their day-to-day jobs. Organizer Mark Brandon recently stopped by the studio to tell me a little bit more about the event.
It's a day-long learning event. It's designed to bring together technology developers with those people that want to learn about technology development. So some of the topics that are going to be covered there are cloud computing, mobile development, UI, UX, that's user experience design, big data, content management, and tech entrepreneurship in Northwest Arkansas. Those are the learning tracks, and we have 42 breakout sessions in each track. Sorry, six breakout sessions in each track for a total of 42 breakout sessions. And then we have a closing keynote that includes some of the leading technology commercialization or economic development people in the region.
So is this the first time you guys have done this event?
This is TechFest's third year. This is the first year we've done it in Fayetteville. Previously, it's been at the Center for Nonprofits at St. Mary's, but now it's going to be at UA Global Campus.
Excellent. So this is the third year, but why initially did you decide that this was an event that you wanted to help organize?
Well, I need to state that this is my first year organizing NWA Tech Fest, and it grew out of Tulsa Tech Fest, which is in its sixth year and is still going strong, but NWA Tech Fest wasn't going to happen in this year until a couple of us decided to take up the reins and make it happen. So the reason we did it is it's a great event. I mean, it's great for networking, it's great for learning, it's great for skills development, connecting and nurturing community connections. It's great for all of those things.
So it's targeted at Northwest Arkansas.
Yes.
And as far as the audience, you know, I don't know a ton about technology, but I'm interested in it. So can I come, or who exactly is this directed at?
It's targeted there's a mix. There are some sessions that are targeted to the more advanced people that may already be involved and want to get deeper into their skills, or it may be total novices. We have several tracks. For example, you know, beginning iOS development, that's the Apple iPhone development. That's perfectly appropriate for someone that's never even thought about it and thought maybe, you know, I there's an application I have in mind, maybe I want to think about developing. That's perfect for those type of people.
Okay, so I could actually sort of have the basics of how to develop an app? Is that kind of? Okay, because that seems to be where a lot of people are headed right now.
There will be a session where it's demonstrated from start to finish, an app will be developed.
Well, that's very cool. I mean, there's a lot of, I know businesses that are developing apps for various reasons, and that would be a quick and easy way to start.
Huge demand right now for iPhone developers and Android developers.
So who will be leading these sessions? Are they all local people?
Mostly local, some regional. Some are coming as far away as Dallas to speak at the event. They are community resources. They're not paid to come. Some of them will probably have projects to mention. They definitely will not be beating your head with a stick with a sales pitch. But they are uniformly vetted to be qualified to speak on the topic that they're talking about.
And you mentioned a keynote speaker. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
There's a keynote panel composed of six people, and they were chosen because of their position in economic development or technology commercialization. They include Tom Dalton, who is the director of Innovate Arkansas, Jeff Amerine, who is with Gravity Ventures, Jeanette Baeza, who is the director of the ARC Challenge, Mike Malone of NWA Council, Julie McQuaid of the City of Fayetteville, and Chris Koenig with Microsoft, who's going to be representing Microsoft BizSpark, which is a startup program for Microsoft. Those are the six panelists, and I think it's going to be great.
Now, with the panel, will there be one person moderating, or will they be taking questions from the audience?
I'll be moderating, and they'll start out with a 5 to 10 minute introductory pitch. The session is entitled The Elevator Pitch for NWA.
Oh, okay.
So they'll have a 5 to 10 minute pitch, and then it will open it up to Q&A from the audience.
And do people need to, will they have to register specifically for that event, or is it just open to anybody participating in the?
Registration is encouraged because we need to plan for the food and drink consumption and swag consumption.
Oh, swag.
Walk-ups are definitely welcome. Mm-hmm. The event is free to attend, although we are doing it on behalf of the NWA Food Bank. We suggest a $2 donation or a two-can donation to the NWA Food Bank.
Excellent. But other than that, it's free?
Other than that, it's free, yes.
Okay. And to register, they can do that online?
Yes, at nwatechfest.com.
And when they go to register, will they need to sign up for the specific sessions that they want to participate in?
No. UA Global Campus, we have the whole facility reserved for that day, and it's just walk into the classroom that is hosting your learning track.
So where can people find, I guess, the schedule of events? Say they walk up on the day of the event on Friday, and will there be a schedule there for them to look at and see where they want to go?
Yes, we'll have agendas aplenty, and the agenda is also available at the website, nwatechfest.com.
Excellent. So why... Maybe if somebody's kind of on the fence about this, you know, why would you encourage them, or why do you think it would benefit them to attend this event?
If you've ever thought about developing technology as a career path, as a hobby, it's a great event. You can hone your existing skills. You can learn new skills. You can make new connections. You can find new mentors. Maybe you don't want to be a developer, but you just need to find that developer that can make your dream come true. Then this is the best event in the region to attend.
So NWA Tech Fest, it's Friday the 24th. It starts at 8:15 in the morning. That's at the UA Global Campus, which is located on the east side of the square.
That's right.
Registration is free, but you're encouraged to give a $2 donation or two canned food donation for the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank.
That's right.
And more information can be found at
NWATechFest.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Good. Thank you.
John Lee Anderson describes a Syria fractured across religious lines. Battles rage in city streets. Rebels say it's just a matter of time before the government crumbles. But no one can say for sure what happens if or when that happens. I'm John Donvan. Life inside Syria. John Lee Anderson of The New Yorker joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1, following the noon edition of Ozarks at Large here on KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and time now for a trivia question. Today's trivia winner will get a couple of tickets to any Northwest Arkansas Naturals game at Arvis Ballpark. There are only a couple left, so time to use those up, and also a couple of movie passes, good at any local Malco movie theater. Today's question, trivia question, comes courtesy of our own Kyle Kellums. There are 368 operating drive-in theaters in the United States, including three in Arkansas. There's one in Fayetteville, the 112 drive-in, one in Marsha, and one in Mountain View. Only five states in the entire United States do not have an operating drive-in. Alaska is one of them. Can you name any of the other four? So all you have to do, you don't have to name all four. You just have to be able to name one of the remaining four. So again, only five states do not have an operating drive-in. Alaska is one of them. Can you name any of the other four states? If you have a guess or you know the answer, give me a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF, and good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 20th of August, 2012. It was on this day, 1940, Winston Churchill delivered a speech to the House of Commons with the famous line, "Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few." It was in the midst of the Battle of Britain. He was referring to the Royal Air Force, who had held off the German Luftwaffe. Winston Churchill wrote all of his own speeches before he became prime minister. He was considered somewhat old-fashioned, but after the war began, his dramatic style fit the mood of the country. His father, Lord Randolph Churchill, served in Parliament and was famous for his spontaneous speeches, but Winston Churchill labored over every one. He researched them, planned out the speech in his head, dictated it aloud, revised it, and rehearsed it over and over, sometimes sitting in a bathtub. It's the birthday of the poet Heather McHugh, San Diego, 1948, who said, "I have always lived on waterfronts. If you live on the edge of an enormous mountain or an enormous body of water, it's harder to think of yourself as being so important. That seems useful to me. Spiritually." Went to Harvard when she was 16, sold her first poem to The New Yorker a year later. Her books of poetry include Hinge and Sign and Upgraded to Sirius. It's the birthday of H.P. Lovecraft, born Providence, Rhode Island, 1890, who wrote science fiction, fantasy, and horror. His father had a nervous breakdown when he was a boy. Lovecraft was raised by his mother, two aunts, and his grandfather, who all lived together. The books of H.P. Lovecraft, still widely available, books like The Dreams in the Witch House and other weird stories. H.P. Lovecraft, who said, "I never ask a man what his business is, for it never interests me. What I ask him about are his thoughts and dreams." And it's the birthday of the novelist Jacqueline Suzanne, born Philadelphia, 1918, came to New York to become an actress, did some commercials, had bit parts, worked as a model, wrote a book about her poodle, and then in 1966, she published a novel, Valley of the Dolls, about three young women in show business who are addicted to barbiturates, which they call dolls. The world of publishing hated Valley of the Dolls. Everyone agreed that it was trash. Truman Capote said Jacqueline Suzanne looked like a truck driver in drag, and all the negative publicity only increased the sales. It sold 8 million copies in paperback. Here's a poem for today by Denise Levertov, entitled Celebration. Brilliant this day, a young virtuoso of a day. Morning shadows cut by sharpest scissors, deft hands, and every prodigy of green, whether it's ferns or lichen or needles or impatient points of bud on spindly bushes, greener than ever before. And the way the conifers hold new cones to the light for blessing, a festive rite, and sing the oceanic chant the wind transcribes for them. A day that shines in the cold like a first prize brass band swinging along the street of a cold, dusty village, wholly at odds with the claims of reasonable gloom. Celebration, a poem by Denise Levertov from This Great Unknowing, published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites, Reputation.com. Written by Betsy Alistair, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Okay, time now for the answer to today's trivia question. Before Writer's Almanac, I mentioned this is a trivia question courtesy of Kyle Kelms. There are 368 operating drive-in theaters in the United States, including 3 in Arkansas. Only 5 states do not have an operating drive-in movie theater. Alaska is one of the states. And my question was if you could name any of the other 4 states. So if you answered North Dakota, Louisiana, Maryland, or Delaware, you would be correct. So we will put the names of all of our callers who had the correct answer in the ceramic cow, and I'll pull a winner. And today's winner will receive some tickets to Northwest Arkansas Natural home baseball game and a couple of movie passes to any local Malco movie theater. KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, dedicated to environmental responsibility and serving the area for 37 years. Pack Rat offers a selection of footwear, canoes, and kayaks, camping gear, plus urban and outdoor clothing. A fan page is available on Facebook or visit packrat.biz, that's B-I-Z, for the events calendar or more information. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Eureka Springs. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large at noon. I will be back along with my co-host, Kyle Kelms. And happy Monday to everyone, and I hope your week is off to a great start.